session number 14975, William Rochester, Reel 9.
Mr. Rochester, Reel 9. Did you get involved, Mr. Rochester, with any controlling of the Indians during times of troubles? Were there any problems out there while you were there?
Yes, there was a bit of trouble. It was a religious trouble between two sets, the Hindu and the Muslim. And we had to go out and guard, as a hard word, it was, you know, it was bit around some place to try to keep them off it, sort of style. And we had to be very careful, because some of the people, they nearly all had sticks, lathies they called them, like broom shanks, you know. And they used them. On the, we had some boys came in and they'd been hit with these things. And I thought, well, I'm not going to get mine hit with them. You couldn't hit them unless there was a government man said, you hit that man. You had to be careful what you did and how you did, and if you hit anybody, it had to be damn good and knock them out, you know, so you couldn't remember it anymore. This was all passed down to you, and the local authority chap that went round with you used to tell you these things. Don't, or there's court cases and there's all kinds. If you shoot somebody, kill them. Don't wound them. And a couple of times we did fire in a minute. So I thought, well, I was a keen photographer. And then I thought, I'm not going to get in trouble, and none of my kids are going to get in trouble. And if anybody comes to hit us, we're going to hit them back. So I took my camera out. Well, I got my camera out, and I got the bearer, my bearer, and a couple of others. And I said, I want to take photographs of you. And I had them taking photographs. A couple of our lads down, two of these were these broom shanks, that's what they had actually, broom shanks, and they were standing, you know, like that, and I took photographs of these, going to hit them with sticks on there, and I thought, right, that's my bloody evidence, I've got my evidence in there if anybody comes, and you'll never believe it, the first time I went out, we got attacked, and my blokes just went at them, I just said, right, go, get going, and I was in with them, I didn't have anything, they had the rifles. You know, they were butting them with the rifles and showing them away and everything. Anyhow, I had my evidence. It was reported. And we took back and I said, look, I've got the evidence what started it. Got the films, defended the film over, they got a development showed it. So we were off. After that, 90% of them, the blokes had got their evidence before they went up.
So you contrived the evidence.
Ah, yes, well. I didn't like the idea. I mean, I had a good platoon. They looked after me and I looked after them. And I didn't like anything anywhere at all where they could get damn well hurt and we couldn't retaliate. And I thought, no, I'm going to have some evidence beforehand. So I made the evidence beforehand. And when they started on it, we retaliated. And we were all right. Because we retaliated. We didn't have started. And that was the proof on there.
So in theory, you were under pretty strict control as to what you could do when you were in these riot situations.
Yes. We were out once. It was this religious thing, you see. But sometimes it switched onto them and us, just like that. And we were in a street, a shopping street, big buildings, and we were right across the street. There's a crowd coming up the street, and we were told, get across there. Now, we all had rifles. There were about 20, 25 or 26 of us, the whole platoon, but some was behind, right across the road, and the magistrate was with us. That's all I can tell you. I don't know what he was, but he was something local.
Was he English or Indian?
He was Indian. And, well, I don't know whether he was Indian or whether he was part Indian. But he wasn't a British, he was both. And he had a read the authority officer. And you stand there, and these fellas coming up the middle of the road, and I thought, God, if they come up here, we'd be trampled to death, you know. And he read out there the law that said that if I will give you instructions, and if you do not stop, we will shoot at you, and I will point the gun at you, and then describe the bloke in the front that was going to get shot. Then he would give an instruction to the lad. You aim your rifle at that man and point to him and his description and everything. That was the that had to be read beforehand. And they didn't stop this once over. He didn't point anybody out, but he told them they were going to shoot. Well, there was only one bloke and had any ammunition. We only had, I think he had two or three rounds in his rifle, and the Indian had a few more in his pocket. That was all. Now he was told to fire above the heads. We all had rifles, but only one person had the good shot. Well, it was Lance Corporal. He had the run. Fire one round over the top. Well, that stopped them a bit. And when they stopped, they were quiet. So this bloke walked a little bit further down with his Indian language again and pointed at the bloke about 20 yards off him. You will be shot dead if you do not get away. He was the leader of the gang. And that killed him. That got away. I thought, oh, God. I've never been so scared in my life. I wasn't even so scared about that when I was in France. I mean, just imagine it. They come right, the whole lot just pushing their way down. They'd have just walked over you, you know, right down. That was anti-religious. And it started because I'm not sure which Hindu and the Hindu and the what they call oh come on the Hindu
Muslims
and the Muslims. I'm not sure which were on, but one of them had a church built there, and the other one wanted to build a one there, opposite. So that started them off because one of them, I'm not sure which one it is. It's such a long time ago. Had the statue of a man sitting down with a penis. And when the wedding was on, they were around there. You couldn't see anything, just this statue stuck in the corner somewhere. And apparently, we were told, man, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but their brides had to be virgins. And they had to be proved virgins before they got married, before they were married them. So they had to sit on this penis to make them bleed come. You know, if there's no blood come, they wouldn't marry them. Now, that was the story that we got when I was over. Whether it's right, true or not, I couldn't tell you. But that was the story, and that caused a lot of the fighting. Building the church opposite the other one. Oh, they went mad about it. They did. They're really mad.
Were most of the Indians, irrespective of which religion, anti-British?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say it at all. I think I thought they were quite good. I mean, the shopkeepers were pretty good to you. They bargained with you, you know. They would bargain with you. Soon as you went in, there was not very often prices on the goods. You want to see how much, and they told you, well, if you paid them, you were crackers. Used to say no, another 10 pence, five, 2 rupees, 3 rupees, and they would argue with you, but they would get what they wanted, and so would you. You were happy, but they knew what they were going to get, you know. And I thought they were quite good, actually. I never saw any of them at all. I wasn't long there, maybe 4 years, 5 years, or something like that, I think. And I got about a bit. I was on a fair amount of courses. I travelled all around a lot of places in India on the courses, and I found everything was all right.
From Barakpur, where did you move to?
Bombay. Well, we entered with Calcutta. We were in Fort William, or Barakpur. We used to take turns. And Fort William was an old fort, terrifically thick walls, but you could put your finger on the wall in some of the rooms and screw your finger and make a hole. And sit and watch, and it would fill up with bugs. And every Thursday was supposed to be a holiday that Queen Victoria gave the soldiers. Well, it turned out to be what they call a bugging day. We had metal beds, metal legs, and metal about that thick, interlaced, up, you know, on the top. So we used to carry the, take the legs off, carry the bed out into the corridor, two of us on the corridor, say, right, mind your toes and just drop it down there, then go around killing them on the floor. they were into the in between the laces, you know. It was dreadful. It was a horrible place to be.
And did they attack you in any way? Did they bite you with these bugs? Or they're just purely living close
I
to you?
I think they were just living. I didn't get, I can't remember being bitten at all, or anybody else actually, but just the fact that they were there. That's all. You see them on the wall when you put a hole in the wall. And of course you did that, then you had to go and get some junk and fill it up again. You should go and get some soil, clay soil, and fill the hole up again, and get a piece of white chalk and rub it over the top and hide it up a bit.
You've mentioned sunburning. Were there any other things that could affect your health? What kind of illnesses or diseases had you to be careful of?
Gonorrhea and syphilis.
So there were a lot of ladies of leisure around.
There was brothels all over the place, all over, and floating as well. But I will say that the draft I went on, there was about 30-something of us, I think, going over. Somewhere around about the 30 mark. That might have included the three sergeants that were going back, but somewhere about the 30, about 30 of us. And I think there, Charlie, who had been in India for years, and it'd been 3 years or 2 years at the depot, was going back again. He said, I'm going to do something with these fellas, but when we get there, that I don't think it's been done before, but I think it'll be, well. I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to see the medical officer and ask him to take you around some of the VD hospitals. And the second morning, we got there sometime in the afternoon, because we had to travel 2.5 days or something across India in these, what they call them, trams. Those railway coaches were just like our trams. There's no glass in. They're just lets, you know. There was glass on the outside, but in the middle you could see all the way down there, right down. And the next morning, the draft was called in from all the companies where they were scattered around the battalion. And the medical officer gave us a lecture on VD and syphilis, explained the difference to us and how easy it was to get caught. And he said that it can be very, very punishing. Gonorrhea is not very much, but it can be the treatment can be punishing. And some people go and get it a second time, and sometimes perhaps a third time. Well, anybody that gets it after the second time is an idiot, because the second time they get it, the treatment is three times worse, deliberately to stop them going doing it again. And we didn't know what the treatment was, you know, but this is, he was telling us, and syphilis is a deadly, it's dreadful, and it's very difficult to get rid of. And you'll probably have it all the rest of your life, maybe die through it. But that killed a lot of them. So he took us to the hospital. I can't remember where it was, but it was a good distance away from us. I always thought the nearest one was a place called Pune, which is about 50, 60 miles down the coast. But it wasn't that. It was another place. And they showed us around there. And he had arranged for, as far as he could, for people to be treated for gonorrhea. And I think I don't know whether it was the first or second dose, but there was plenty of screaming going on. And then he took us into a syphilis ward, and we saw two young lads with syphilis. Oh, God, it was dreadful. Just a massive sore. You couldn't see them. You could see from there to there. You know, round
waist to the
from his knee. Belly button to his above his knees, everything else was covered up, it was dreadful. And he said that he'll never recover from it, you know. Then I asked, why did they scream so much? Because of the pain. I said, oh yes, but you said. The second time is always worse than the first time. Why is that? How would you do it? So I said, I'll show you. So he took a little case, like a spectacle case, out of his pocket, opened it, and he got a thing out. He said, that's the instrument. And it was like an umbrella. what do you do with that? You explain it to the whole court, but they were just sitting dumbstruck, you know. Then somebody said, I think I know what you do. So the doctor asked him what was the matter, and he explained, no, he said, I'll tell you what we do. They close it up, he said, we'll put that down your penis, where the water comes out your penis. Then when we pull it out, it opens up and it scrapes the inside of your penis and pulls all the stuff out. He said, that's what you get when you get gonorrhea, so keep off the girls if you can. Well, I think it turned to 90% of them. I don't think 90% went anywhere near that. It turned me off anything like that at all. Well, I mean, the look of them would turn 90% of the people off. The way they were dressed and the smell of them and that, you know. Because they're only things on the road, really. There was no decent brothels. They looked all the same.
No official brothel?
No official. No. No, not there. Now,
catching VD would be an army discipline job.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yes, it was. You got junkers and all kinds of things. You got your pay stop as well.
Did they attempt to give you things to hopefully as a precaution before they went with the girl, as they did later in the army?
I can't remember that. I don't think what they call them, French something. But I don't think they were. They were invented or something then at all. I mean, it's over 60 years ago, 64 years ago. I mean, I don't really know whether it was invented. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many families in this country with a lot of kids, would there? All the families had 5 and 6 children. All the old films you see, they've all got families, you know. Every time they wanted sex, there was a kid or something. So I don't think it was there.
Must have been hard, though, on young men.
Yeah.
Peak of their physical prowess, and well, no women available.
I'll tell you another story about that. When you're in Bombay, there's a gulf. I can't remember what they call it. The Bombay, you know, it comes up like that with a bump. Then there's a gulf goes up there to the western side, the big airport. Now, what the hell do they call it? Anyhow, you look at a map and you'll find that. I forgot the name. If you mention them, I'll remember it. One's a big airfield there now as well at the top. Now there's about 4 ports on the way up there. Now the Gulf had, there was 4 Navy ships went up there, and every 3 months one of them came into Bombay for overhaul. So when they were overhaul, they were attached to us because we were the regiment in Bombay. Some of them stayed in Bombay, some of them came up to Dulali, and I was in Dulali with a batch of them, and they really enjoyed being on shore for about 3 months, you know, while the ship was being done. They would do about 5 or 6 weeks up with Dulali, and then they were down where they played football with us, hockey with us, talked us to death, just cursed us. it was fantastic on them. Then one of them said, would you like to come on a trip with us up the Gulf? I said that would be delicious, but whether we can get it or not. He said, well, we've been under the officer, we're trying to get a half a dozen, and he mentioned a few names, Lance Corporals and Corporals and that they were being friendly with, and one or two privates. So he said, we're trying to get a half a dozen of you to come up, if we can, if they can get leave, because it'll be 2.5-3 months or something. So, I think there's 4, they got 4 away. And I wasn't one of them. I was boat sick because I would have loved to go out with them. They got 4 on these boats to go up. And when they come back, they had about 4 different kinds of money. every port had its own money. It was a little state or something, you know. But they couldn't drink beer on the ship. You could buy the stuff. But the skipper used to stop, and they would row ashore and leave them a couple of hours on the shore. Then they would send another boat out. The boat out, to chuck them into the boat, they all come back tight. They said it was fantastic the way they went. They went right up to Beirut. It went right up to Beirut at the top. Now, to make them important, they only had 1 fund. You say, well, that's not much, that's only a ship. But if you've got 2, 3, or 4 funnels, ooh, no matter how south, oh, that's a massive ship in there. So they had a couple of artificial ones. And he was just shoving that artificial one up through the night. you know, fix it up. So you got your three funnels by the time you go up to Brest, come back. Well, I say I didn't get with them. I would have loved to have been with them, but we know all the stories about them. We saw a lot of photographs of them taken, even with the funnels on the ships and what the hell did they call them? All start with bees, the ships. Bees. I forgot them all now. And now I got in touch with a gang of them that was stationed in Bombay. They were down in Bombay. Now they wanted to go to the brothels, you know. So the PO in charge of them was friendly with the RSM in the mess. And the RSM was talking. He had a sergeant's interview, and he was talking about they want to go to the brothels. Want someone to take them round. I said, "Well, the red caps." Excuse me, said the red caps. The best bloke to take them round. Ah, yes, he said, but what more than a rest cab, because there's going to be about 15 or 20 of them going round. And you've got, if there's 15 or 20 going round, we want 15 or 20 coming back. And you know, you don't know what men are like when they're out. I said, well, I don't know. The lecture we got, if it'd be all right, he said, oh, you've got one of the lectures, you're the lecturer. I said, I've got one of the lectures when we came out. And I said, it turned me against everything. So he said, right, you all want to go. So there's about seven or eight of us, sergeants and corporals, selected to go with them, take them round with the red cap, taking them, because he knew all the routes, you know, take them to the brothel area just outside of Bombay. And we went through there. Hey, God, I never seen anything like it in my life. Sitting in the, and some of them didn't have, had window frames, but no glass, they had bloody bars up. And the lasses sitting there when. Sometimes, well, nothing on at all, they're standing up and wobbling their boobs around and thumping themselves around, you know, come on in, oh God. How they would, I don't know how people could go with them, really. And they're all in, just like shops, you know, shop windows. There's not one in one there. The whole bloody street was full of them. We went round. And now we got round, down there, the red cup. We got round, there was three of them, I think two or three of them all together. We got round there anyhow and back again, and they thanked us in the mess for taking us round. And there wasn't one of them wanted to go with them. The women, I'll tell you what the state of them. I mean, a sailor bloke went away on sea on a ship with lads of people, and not even seen a woman. They wouldn't go. And it was dreadful, the district there. That was it. The Baroda. I can't remember what they called them. They all start with B, the ships.
So, Barakpur, Bombay, Calcutta, were there any other places that you were stationed in India?
No, not stationed. I was at other places. I think I still got a sketch map upstairs. When you finish, I'll finish. Where I went for courses, I made it that. I had to talk to some... ladies not the chapel, they wanted to, they were short of somebody to talk, and they said, get Bill. Because they'd had the doctor talking about a trip to India, and I was there, and watched, you know, and he was saying, now Bill, that would be like you, what's yours like that? I said, doctor, I was there 50 odd years before you. They're talking about New Delhi. I said, that's right, we went through New Delhi. I said, but New Delhi wasn't there when I was there. They just had the signposts out. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, in 32 and 33, 33, 34, New Delhi wasn't they were just starting to build it, you know. Oh, I forgot about that.
When did you leave India then to go to Sudan?
I think it was in the January. It was early 37. I'm not sure when it was, but... it must have been early, because I was only in the Sudan 3 or 4 months, and I came on leave, and I got married in July at home. I was on holiday. I got 3 months leave from there. And
how did it work? Was it the whole battalion moving to the Sudan, yeah, or just a draft of you?
No, the battalion. What happened? I was in the 2nd Battalion. Now, they had been in India 21 years. They'd been overseas 20 years or something, and it was their turn to come home. The 1st Battalion were in England. It was their turn to go out. Well, they were going out, and they were going. The ships were going to pass in the Red Sea, through the canal and in the Red Sea. The home battalion was short in numbers, a couple of hundred. The away battalion were full strength. So there was a couple of hundred from India to Khartoum would be on a draft to go to China. That's where they were going, you see. I was on leave, sergeant. My friend, lovely friend, sent me a letter saying, sorry, Bill, you're on the top of the sergeant's list for China. Oh, I said, right, okay, thank you. No, that was it. So I told Tommy, I said, look, I'm going to China.
Who was this?
Tommy, Ina. My missus. Call her Thomas Ina. And she's known as Ina Bayer.
So you were back in England on leave at this point?
I was in England on leave. I said, I'm on the list for leave. Look, I'm on the list for China. That means I was only 24. I said, that's at least 2 years before the army will let me get married. And if we want to get married, they'll bring you out. But if we're married, they'll bring you out as a wife, but they wouldn't bring you out as a girlfriend, and I couldn't afford to bring you out. And I'll be out there maybe 8 or 10 years, you think? So we decided we'll get married. And I went back to Khartoum. A couple of days after, the hockey officer come along and said, get yourself fit, Bill. We're entered in the All England hockey company. I said, sorry, I'm going to China, not me. Oh, and then the rugby bloke come along and said the same thing. Sorry, I'm going to China, I'm on the draft for China. 2 or 3 weeks after that, I wasn't on the draft for China. I came home. Those things got me.
What was the Sudan like?
Bloody hot. It was very hot and dry. Very hot and dry. Khartoum itself, the streets are laid out like the Union Jack. And you can see them. There's an Air Force plane placed there, a mile and a half from the barracks. And we used to go across and play hockey with them. And they had, what they call them? Oh. And they made with string. There's two wings and tied up with string. Gladiators? No. During the war, there was half a dozen of them set away with torpedoes to try and stop the German ship going from A to B along the channel. And the eight of them were all hit, knocked down.
That's the swordfish?
No, that's not the name. It was something like that, but it was a very old plane, and I think the speed limit was somewhere about 80 miles an hour or something like that, you know. Well, they had them in the Sudan. They used to go down the Sudan and take government people down and drop them off and all this, that and the other. You could go in there and have a fly round with them if you signed a certificate that you're doing at your own expenses. You know, there's no, if you got knocked up or the plane crashed or something, that's just too bad, you know. That was insurance on them. Well, I went with them. I got up them once, and I was driving round. They were going round, and they had cameras on for taking photographs down there below. Well, they let us take there was a football match was going, and they were going round the football field, practicing taking football and that, you know. And then I went down. There was one of the government people going down, and we were over there. We arranged to go a trip for these going down the country, but we had not to get out of the plane. When the plane landed, we had to stay in the plane. And we went down there, and I can't remember the tribe, but they were about 7 foot, massive people they were. Good. And we landed there for about a half an hour while the government got out and did his job, or he'd go in and come back again. So I had two rides with them down there.
What was the accommodation, the barracks, like in Khartoum or wherever you were?
Well, we were lucky. We were on each side of the White Nile. Was it the White Nile or the... I don't know. Each side of the Nile, where it splits into two, just outside of Khartoum. And went down. We were this side of it, and we had grass. We had grass football pitches, two or three hockey pitches. Well... there was one, always flooded, one hockey and one football, always flooded, and then dry up, then you played two games on it or something like that, you know, then it flooded again. But on the other side, over the river, it was desert. You opened your barrack door and you're in the desert. Oh, it was a dreadful place. Big rocks and stones, not sand, stones and sand and everything, you know, all the way over. And the Essex Regiment were there, just across the road. We had a bathing pool, smashing everything. It was a different country across there.